Welcome to Top Shelf at the Merrick Library with your host, Carol Ann Tack.
Okay, welcome back to Top Shelf at Merrick Library. This is episode 30. Yes, episode 30. Now, that may not sound like much to you, but to me, it is a huge milestone. I've been very fortunate to have your time and attention and all of the author contributions, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate everyone's support. It's been a wonderful experience, and with that, I remain your grateful host, Carol Ann Tack, so let's get right into it. Now, the last time we were together, I mentioned some novels that feature the suburbs and the lives of the people who live in different parts of the same town. You've got your little houses and you've got your very big houses, the differences in the jobs, so there's a disparity there, the different kind of cars, material things. And I was recently very fortunate to host Julie Langsdorf for White Elephant. She was a recent guest, and we talked about this suburban type of writing that's been very popular lately, or at least it's popular with me, so come along on that journey, folks. That's White Elephant, and then I talked about The Wonder Garden by Lauren Acampora, The Dogs of Littlefield by Suzanne Byrne, and Heft by Liz Moore. Now, of course, you know, we're driving around town, we all look at some of these homes, and from the outward appearances, we tend to think they all have such wonderful, picture-perfect lives, and of course, that can be very far from the truth. So as we talk about the suburbs, just so you, the listeners, know, the Top Shelf Library, Top Shelf podcast comes to you from the Merrick Library in a conference room that I'm sitting in right now in Merrick, New York, which is a suburban town on Long Island. We're approximately an hour and a half away from the Hamptons and about 2.5 hours away from Montauk, but depending on the traffic, that can be 15 hours. And I'm not kidding when I say that. But we do it. We either drive it, we either take the jitney, or we carpool. So there's always been this fascination with the Hamptons, with Montauk, and going out east for the summer or for the weekend, especially if you live on this Long Island area. There's been a few books about Long Island, these fictional stories, these novels that take place on either the North Fork or the Hamptons, and I personally can't get enough of them. I think particularly of Orient by Christopher Bolan, Indiscretion by Charles Dubow, and A Stirring in the North Fork by Mark Torres. And to this distinguished group, thankfully, we can now add another debut novel that we'll talk about in this podcast, and it's The Fabulous East End by Jason Allen. It's not called The Fabulous East End. It's called The East End, but I'm telling you, it's fabulous. And that's by Jason Allen. So from the first page, the book takes off, and you, as the reader, you're really not going to quite believe the Memorial Day weekend you are about to have. The East End is a thriller. It's a page-turner. And as soon as it came across on the wires, I sort of found it on Twitter. Somebody was raving about it, a library colleague. I finished it in one day. And then I went back and started it again. What I love is that it's this peek at this lifestyle out east, and it's perfect for book discussions because I'm not giving anything away here. There are no spoilers, but it leaves the reader in this place where, what would you do if something like this happened to you? And that's what I love about it. It's so organic, and you think you know how you're going to handle certain situations. And in this book, the whole point is how the characters react to this situation that occurs. You won't be able to put it down. It's perfect for the summer. It's a perfect read. And I can't wait to introduce you to our debut novelist and today's very special guest, Jason Allen. Jason Allen, welcome to Top Shelf at Merrick Library.
Well, thanks so much, Carol Ann. I really appreciate you having me.
I'm thrilled, and I hope my New York accent isn't causing you any post-traumatic stress.
Not at all.
I'm just going to give the listeners a little bit of background on you. Jason writes fiction, poetry, and memoir, and in fact, he has a really fabulous collection of poetry called A Meditation on Fire, and I will provide the links for that material on our podcast page. Jason Allen has an MFA from Pacific University and a PhD in literature in creative writing from Binghamton University. His work has been published in Passages North, the Patterson Literary Review, Contemporary American Voices, Oregon Little Literary Review, and many other venues. And this week, the East End was made a staff pick at the hallowed halls of Powell's Books. Hooray, hooray. Yep. That's amazing. Jason was born in the Green Mountains of Vermont, beautiful location, and then grew up as part of the working class in the Hamptons on Long Island, New York, which is the debut novel we're talking about today. It does take place in the Hamptons. Jason, would you mind, please? I know I'm going to blow it if I give a description of this book, so I'm going to put it into better hands to explain. Tell the readers about the East End.
All right. Well, thanks first for all the incredibly nice things that you said about my book. I really, really appreciate it. It takes place mainly in Southampton. My mom was a single mom who raised me and my brother in Hampton Bays, and she actually worked for a multimillionaire family in Southampton. She was their housekeeper / caretaker, and I was lucky enough to not only visit the estate when I was a kid, but I also got to compare and see how basically poor we were in comparison to this family. But when I was 19, I worked there for one summer. So I got to be a fly on the wall, like from a very close perspective. I got to see how the other half lives, or the other 1% lives. So the basic premise of the story is that you follow multiple points of view. There's a teenage working class kid who breaks into mansions for the thrill of it. He's a likable kid, I hope, from the very beginning. But you can see that he's working through some issues from the very start. His mother is also a point of view, and she's got intense issues with addiction that are addressed. And then you also follow the billionaire's point of view, who owns this Southampton estate. So the entire novel is fictional, but it's really based on a place I knew well and kind of an amalgam of a lot of people I knew.
Did you set out to write a suspense novel? Because it seems very organic. The narrative is, like I said, it's so quick. I finished it in one day. And then because I felt like I was on this fast and furious ride, I did have to go back and read it again because I didn't want to miss anything. And there's so many beautiful passages in it that I was glad that I went back and sort of paged through it again so that I didn't miss anything. But so I can't imagine the East End being anything other than this super quick suspense story. Was it something else that you intended to write, or did you just get on this galloping horse and just go with it?
Well, actually, when I first began, I wasn't really sure if I was writing a novel at the very beginning. I started a section that was a Corey chapter. He's the teenage character. And then I started a different piece that was the Gina character, his mother. And then I realized I really was intrigued by both of them, and I wanted to bring them into the same story at the very least. And then really quickly, it turned into, yes, this has to be a novel and in multiple points of view, and what if I went into the billionaire's point of view as well? The pacing, like the thriller pacing, that was something that developed over time. I realized that the books that I love the most, there's at the very least, there's a tension that just will not let me go. This one just happened to have a really rapid pace at a certain point, too. So it's kind of like if you can imagine a novel set like where The Great Gatsby is set, but where it's like the outsiders, where it's the greaser kids, like the greasers and the socias. I kind of liked the fact that those two things collide, and then when someone dies on the property at the billionaire's estate, that's not a spoiler either, really. That's just when everything completely goes crazy. And I wanted to focus on the characters first, though, to really bring them to life as real people that we could care about. And I genuinely ended up caring about all of them, even the billionaire, which is a surprise, honestly.
Yeah, it is a surprise, and I'm sure you'll hear that. I know you're on your book tour now, and we'll get to that in a minute. But exactly to your point, the characters themselves, Corey in particular, they feel like people that I know. I just feel like I either know them, they're my neighbor's kid, or I've grown up with them at some point. And you ground the reader so quickly in these different voices. You make them tenable, they're identifiable. And for a debut novel, it's amazing that it's very, very well done. And like you said, the Leo character, I was not expecting, and I'm not going to say too much about it, even though I'm really dying to. I was really, the first thing I thought was, oh gosh, who could we get to play this guy in the movie? Because I wasn't expecting to have all of the conflicting emotions that I had with him and for him. I had sympathy for him. I was empathetic. And, you know, you don't expect to sort of have empathy for a billionaire. But I did. And I think that the reader will find the same thing. And I love that it's set out on the East End because Long Islanders know the area. They can't wait to get out there and enjoy the beauty of the beaches on the South Shore. And, you know, Montauk is, well, it's such a little gem, although that too is changing these days, unfortunately. And it's interesting because we talked about how you can go out east and you see the one way certain people live and you look at the way other people live. So has the area, I don't know if you've been back, has it changed since you've been there? Have you noticed anything or have you not gone back since?
Well, that's really going to be interesting. This week I'm going back for the first time in 15 years. I'll be in East Hampton at Bookhampton for a reading at 5 o'clock on Sunday, the 19th. I'll also be doing a reading in New York City on the 20th at Book Culture. So I haven't been into New York City in quite a long time either, but when I moved away from Long Island in 2004, I just really haven't been back because all of my small family, like, we all moved away around the same time. But people have updated me on how much it's changed year by year by year. So it's going to be really interesting. I'm renting a car driving from New York when I fly in to drive all the way to East Hampton.
Yeah, well, it'll take you 15 hours.
Yeah, I don't know. But to also plan all these little detours to look at places where I hung out as a teenager. The tiny house that my mom had, when she sold it, I think that they basically, like, practically, you know, started over. Like, they added on to it so much that it's five times bigger and it wouldn't resemble where we lived at all. So I know it's going to be really interesting to see the whole area again.
Yeah, I can't imagine that drive, actually. I feel like you should either be blogging your drive or you should be doing some sharing that experience with us in some way. Maybe take your phone and record yourself, your impressions as you go, so that you can sort of share that, because I would love to know what, you know, what you think, what you see. It's also interesting to nobody that when I was a kid, my parents took us camping out to Hither Hills every spring, summer, and fall. And we'd pack up our orange Volkswagen camper, and off we'd go on a Friday, and we'd come back home late on a Sunday night. And my dad was and still is a big surf caster. So that's where we went, which, let me tell you, no one else on my block in Brooklyn was going camping out to Hither Hills. I will tell you that. They were all going off to Disney, and we were packing up the camper and going out east, although we would just say Shinnecock or whatever it was. And when we'd go to Shinnecock, we'd fish at the canal, and then we'd camp or fish at the inlet. And we would drive past the country club and the mansions, and I think because we were younger, it never occurred to us that, you know, what these houses were like. In fact, we were just so happy to be at the beach. And I think I would have been there probably in the late 60s and the 70s. Is that around the time period that you were working and living out there?
Well, I was a kid in the 80s when my mom started working for that multimillionaire family. So in the late 80s, going into the 90s is when I saw that Southampton estate the most. And the summer that I worked there, I would guess, was maybe the summer of maybe 1994. Mm-hmm. And they weren't out there very much, so I actually saw the place a lot more than I saw the people who lived there. But that one summer when I worked there, I was sort of like Corey. I mean, some of the jobs that Corey does in the book, I actually did those same tasks. But overall, like, the character isn't me. It's just, it was surprising to see how much of me did trickle in, though. Just some of those work experiences. The people my mom worked for were actually an exception, I think. They were nicer to her and a little more generous, I would say, than a lot of the people who would have an employee the way that she was for them. So I always want people to know, like, this isn't the family my mom worked for. It also is definitely not my mom, the character Gina, because... And my mom is one of those people that just has never even drank my entire life.
Right.
You know from the book that Gina is, like, really, really, really struggling with alcohol.
You know, she is, but I loved her. I feel like she knows her struggle.
Yeah, I feel like she's an amalgam of so many people I know that I wanted people to understand alcoholism maybe a bit better and how difficult it is to enter into recovery, even when you know you need to. I'm wide open with this about my own recovery. Mm-hmm. So 12 years ago, I started recovery myself, and the people that I've connected with have been the warmest, most amazing people. And then to hear what their story was before, you know, getting sober, it's just miraculous that most of us are even alive. But then the selflessness, like the fact that people are just, you know, so quick to say, I would be happy to help you for nothing in return. You know, I just have never found that anywhere else.
And it's also very hard to ask for help, right? I just feel like it's human nature to know, well, we can do this on our own. But when you have that struggle, it's really hard to reach out to someone and ask. So when someone just says, what can I do? Let me help you. It's a great thing. And I love that Gina makes that connection in the book with her sponsor. And the woman is just so, her sponsor is just so, I actually thought, well, what's her story? Maybe Jason can write about this woman. Because I kind of was interested in what her background was. She was just, she was somebody I wanted to know.
Yeah, I loved thinking about how to describe her too. Like basically like a mama bear, like equal parts caregiver and badass.
Yeah. And I love that she calls her, like, as she's supposed to, right? That's that sponsor relationship, that she keeps tabs on her. And Gina looks down and sees that she's calling, and she's like, oh, I just can't call her right now. That whole section was just, it's heartfelt, and it's really beautiful what you're able to do there. And I think it's like Gina, Corey, Leo, those, they are, I mean, they shout loudly from the pages. They really do.
Thank you.
Yeah. And as we talk about what, that you've worked some of the jobs that Corey actually does in the book, you know, most people, when they visit a place on vacation or even camp like I did, you know, they love the location, or you go to Florida, or you go wherever you go, and you think, oh, wouldn't it be great to live here? But to actually live and work there is a completely different environment, with an entire ecosystem, an entire industry of people who actually keep everything running smoothly, right? So without them, you pretty much have nothing. Author Nicole Dennis-Benn portrays this very well in her book called Here Comes the Sun, and it's about this beautiful, gorgeous hotel in Jamaica, this beautiful Jamaican resort, and the behind-the-scenes operation there. And so I feel like you do that with this book as well. And I know that there's a couple of different expressions. Some people call it the trade brigade. Some people call it the trade parade. But without any of that group of people, the whole thing falls apart. So for you to write this, to go back to doing Corey and sort of really, I mean, mining your own experiences, how was that for you to write that? Was it tricky? Was it like, because I don't get any resentment on the page. And I you know, like you just seem very, not positive, but the way it's expressed, it's not in an angry way.
Oh, that's nice to hear. I would say when I was Corey's age, I definitely did have plenty of resentments that, you know, really weren't fair. It was like these blanket resentments against anybody with tons of money.
Of course.
And my perspective did shift over the years. I ended up working for a pool company on Long Island in my 20s. This was way before I was really ready to invest in school. And so for 5 seasons, I cleaned people's pools, and I really was like an invisible presence on their property a lot of the time. So I really got to see like the worst of people. But I also did connect with some customers that were really surprisingly cool and generous and just nice people. One was a jazz musician, actually, who I heard him playing a horn inside. I didn't know who it was. It was the only time I'd ever been into that pool. And he came outside, and just, we ended up making conversation, and somehow stumbled upon the fact that he played with John Coltrane and Miles Davis.
Gosh, oh my gosh.
I never expected to meet somebody so cool at one of these like really, really expensive properties on the Hampton. So that was a good thing. It's like to realize he was not only really interesting, but so down to earth. Yeah, and as far as like Corey goes, one of my favorite questions is people have asked me, so did you ever break into houses yourself?
I was not going to ask, but since you bring it up, yes, we'd like to know.
It's been fun to pause for a second and say no, but I will admit that there was a point when I considered it, like, you know, in an abstract way, because people aren't normally home in their mansions. Mm-hmm. And for Corey, it's more of the thrill to get in and get out and to play some pranks. He doesn't steal anything until this moment when he decides maybe he will. The Corey character to me really stood out just a bit more than the others as the protagonist. And I guess maybe I believe my own experience most to him, but I really care about this kid who is like a detached version of myself. Like the kids that are growing up on Long Island like I did, I would hope that some of them actually somehow know about this book and pick it up and read it and see themselves.
I will make sure of that. I'll make sure of that, because I was, as I was reading it, and then I was reading some of the, you know, your bio material, I thought, wow, so he really went back home in a sense to bring this back up again. I was wondering if it was, you know, if it was painful or not, but even if it were, it's not evident on the page. It's sort of...
It was painful at all. It was actually really kind of cathartic, I think.
Cathartic, yeah.
There's a part of Corey's character where it's like, I wish I had just a little bit more bravery like he does, in a way, to cross that line. He's also just really an admirable kid in a way that he is so invested in trying to look out for other people, like his mom and Angelique, who's his love interest. Yeah, I wouldn't say there was anything difficult as much as it was just really good to process certain feelings. Like Corey feels invisible at a certain point when he works at the estate, and I definitely had felt that at times. And that's where I think that the most frustration comes in for him, is everybody wants to be seen, you know, as, you know, an actual person, not just part of the backdrop or the landscape. Yeah.
Yeah, and he, and like all of us, or maybe not all of us, maybe it's just me, but I think that when he, you know, when he's looking at these houses, you know, you want to know what it looks like inside. I think that's just like human nature. I always want to know. I drive past the houses, I'm like, what is going on in there? I just think that that's human nature. You know, I feel like, you know, you read the real estate section in the Times or something, and they show you these big, beautiful pictures of these homes out east, and you're like, oh my God. So, you know, I kind of, I was feeling Corey, and the last page in the book, there's a, I really don't want to say too much about the way it ends, but that ending with what Corey does, he writes something, this poem, and oh man, that was, it was beautiful. It was really beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, that took a long time to feel like I got it just right, like where I felt like it was exactly how I wanted that tone to resonate. There's just so much about Corey that I think he could be so misunderstood. And when people really say that they cared so deeply about the characters, I just love that. But that's really his truest self that comes through in that final page. So,
and that's what was great for the reader. For me, I'm sorry I cut you off, but for the reader, that particular piece of it was, it sort of knocked me over. I was not expecting any of that. I wasn't expecting it. So when it happened, I thought, oh, Jason Allen, what did you do to me?
Yeah. Well, he's a kid on the surface that might appear rough at the beginning of the book. Like he's got like a bruise under his eye when he's at the ocean before he really gets started with his first night's project. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like I knew a lot of kids like that. Like if we were really going to open up with one another, we would talk about how much pain we were in and just how hard of a time we were having with certain things. But instead, there was this need to have the rough exterior. And so I just really loved kind of letting that exterior fall more and more, especially when he's with Angelique. Like that's where he doesn't want to have the armor up anymore.
Those scenes were amazing between the two of them. Very, very just sweet and kind and very thoughtfully written. And I think when you, especially if you look at somebody like Corey, you make a quick snap judgment, right? You can't help it to make that judgment, but you bring out what's going on behind all of that.
Well, that was my goal with all the main characters, really, is to make a snap judgment on Corey or Gina or even Leo. Especially Leo, maybe. It was really healthy for me to see that there's an incredible conflict that we all carry around, sometimes so much more than we might guess about someone. And with Leo, it's this massive conflict that allowed me to really care about this guy. And then his relationship with Gina also really helps that too.
Yeah, it was good. Like to see. And you kind of sprinkle these little hints about of that relationship. And I thought, oh, look what he's doing there. Look how he's just sort of planting these little seeds. And I love that.
Reader, Caroline.
What's that?
You might be my favorite reader.
Oh, really? because I kept seeing these little, and I'm like, oh, what's he doing here? So I was, yeah, it was great. The way you do that, again, I'm going to repeat myself, the way you plant those seeds, but you kind of do that throughout the entire book. You kind of sort of need, you unpeel that onion, you know, you're just sort of peeling the onion. And then that whole thing with Gina and Leo was just, it was great. And it made it, for the size of the book and the page count, it made it very, it was a lot. It was very voluminous. It was like a, it seems like a bigger book than it is. I guess that's what I'm trying to say as I get all beside myself trying to talk about this book. So you've just started your book tour. Yeah. Again, for the East End, and that must be a real pinch me experience for you.
Oh yeah, it's surreal. Like going to, well, my release party reading in Atlanta, which is where I'm living now, it was amazing, the crowd that came out. Like I took a picture of the crowd from the podium at one point, and it's just a phenomenal feeling. My agent even flew down from New York to come to Atlanta. And she is just like the most wonderful person and the best agent in the world that I could ever hope for. So that was really special. And then, yeah, going to South Carolina and Florida. And then soon I'm going to be up on Long Island and in New York City and in Boston. And it is really surreal.
Yeah, it's a pinch. I can't pinch you through the screen, but I'm pinching you through my imagination. So as you're doing this and you're doing all these book tours, or as you've started, what have readers been saying? Have they sort of reached out to you in any way that's sort of surprising? Is there some character they dislike, don't like, do like? Like, what's been the feedback from them about the characters?
Well, it's been interesting. Some of the earliest readers, the people that got advanced reader copies, like who reviewed it on Goodreads and other places, I decided I can't look at any of that. Like, the only things that I will allow myself to look at are 5-star reviews.
And good, I think, for you.
It's the healthiest decision I can make for myself. But it was a really mixed kind of response before the book was actually released. But since the release date, it's been just this overwhelming wave of people saying how much they love the characters and how they couldn't put it down. I mean, it brings me back to when I got the book deal in the first place. Our original editor, Liz Stein, she had a 6-month-old at home.
Oh, dear.
She told me that she got the book on Friday and didn't put it down until she finished it, like, on Sunday.
That's what this book is.
Monday, yeah, she offered the book deal on Monday and told me that, and I felt like that was the most amazing compliment, because she said, I am so sleep-deprived, I couldn't imagine there was a book that would actually keep me up more. And so it's like, wow, that really is so, like, I knew exactly what she meant when she said that. And my editor ever since, Laura Brown, she said something similar when she first read it. I mean, the people I get to work with are phenomenal. Like, I'm the luckiest debut author there is. Park Row Books has been amazing.
Oh, yeah, they're great.
And my agent, Sarah Bedingfield, like I mentioned, I mean, for her to fly from New York to Atlanta because we have such a special connection, just that gesture was phenomenal. So, I don't know, when people basically say what you've said, that you just couldn't put it down and that you wanted to start reading it again, that really means everything to me, because you work on a book in a vacuum for so long,
right.
And then to hear these things, it's like all that time was really well spent, I guess.
Oh, very well spent. And for the reader, and I can imagine, when I finished reading it, the first thing that I got was a picture in my head of beach towels on a beach and the book on beach towels. That was the first thing that popped into my head. I said, this is going to be a big summer read.
Oh, that's awesome to hear. And I couldn't believe that Cosmopolitan magazine listed it as one of the best books of May to bring to the beach. And then Real Simple also cited it as one of the 5 best books to bring to the beach this summer. I mean, these were publications that I just never really imagined that my book would be mentioned in Cosmopolitan.
Yeah.
Because really, there's a lot of dark stuff that, you know, is threaded through this. But I'm so grateful that they decided to cite my book, because I can imagine it too. And I just think maybe a lot of people are going to get more out of the reading experience than they might expect when they think of beach read.
Right.
I was never really even clear on what that means. Like, what is a good beach read?
I think anything that's a compelling thing. So, you know, people argue, you know, sort of different types of genres, but for me, a beach read is a suspense. It's a really fabulous science fiction book that I can't put down. Not a lot of people know that I am like a total science fiction geek. I know you're looking at me, you're like, really? But that's true. So I think that it constitutes something for everyone, but I feel like this book crosses the genres, right? So you've got your typical summer read, and this hits everybody's towel. This can hit men's towels, women's. I feel like it's going to hit everybody. It's going to hit the young adults. I feel like it's crossing over all of those things. So, like I said, the minute I put it down, I thought, oh, this is going to be on everyone's beach towel this summer. So that was a good feeling. Just for you, it was a good feeling.
Yeah, that's really so nice to hear.
Where can readers find you on the web to check any of your tour dates? I think you have your own website.
Yeah, I'm really not so great at keeping up with the website, but if they find me there, it's jasonallenauthor.com. But if they'd like to find me on Twitter, I've been way more active on there lately. And my Twitter handle is EthanJason, and Ethan is E-A-T-H-A-N. That's my middle name, so... and then also on Facebook, they could find me through my Facebook author page or through my personal Facebook page. And if they're having a hard time finding me as the Jason Allen from the search, just look for the guy with all the tattoos on his. That's me.
What I'll do is I'll put links to all of that on the podcast page for episode 30 so that people can sort of just click in and find you, and those will be direct links that they can access you. And before I let you go, because you have been so gracious with your time, and I'm sure you've got to get out and do all this. What's that?
This has been great.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm so glad. Now, I know you're busy with the tour, but is there anything that you're reading now or that you have read recently that you know, would like to just share with some of our listeners? Recommendations or something that like kind of blew you away recently or something you'd like to talk about?
Sure. This is one of my favorite things to mention during these podcasts that I've done lately is I'm in this lucky position where I get to read advanced reader copies of people's novels. So some of them have either just come out or they're just about to come out. The one I keep mentioning first is by Sarah Faring. It's called The Tenth Girl.
Looks amazing.
It's the most interesting, like amazing novel. I can't even describe it to do it justice, but it basically takes place in a haunted like castle all-girls school at the tip of Argentina. And I mean, really just know that the prose is so lush and amazing, and yet it's like creepy and it's just constantly intriguing. And that's going to come out in September. So Sarah Faring, I would definitely look out for that book. Micaiah Bay-Galt has a novel that's forthcoming. I think hers is coming out in about a month. It's called Goodnight Stranger. George Saunders gave her a blurb, which I think was a really accurate, amazing blurb. So Micaiah Bay-Galt is someone that I love as a person as well. So it's nice to be able to say that I really loved her novel.
Is she free for podcasts?
Yeah. And then Susan Bernhard, she wrote a novel called Winter Loon, which has a protagonist that's really similar to Corey from the East End, which is why I think I immediately latched on and just loved her book as well. So those three. And then I just would like to mention that a book that I reread was All the Light We Cannot See by Anthony Doerr, which I feel like is in my top two at the very least of favorite novels of all time. I just think that it's such a masterpiece. Every line for 500 plus pages is just gorgeous. And yet it's set in World War II.
Yeah, and it's interesting.
The fact that we get to...
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, just the fact that we get to invest in the little girl in France and the little boy in Germany and like eventually they come together. It's just like so masterfully done. So I love that book. And I would say if someone listening to this hasn't read All the Light We Cannot See, run out and buy that and read it for your very next book. And then as soon as my other novels that I mentioned by the debut authors come out, definitely pick those up.
Well, what I'll do is I'll put links to all of these titles so people can look them up. I'll put that into the podcast page. And it's funny that you mentioned All the Light We Cannot See, because that, even though it's 500 plus, it's not that hefty monster book.
Yeah, I just wanted to savor every line, and then I just felt like I had to start reading it from the beginning again. I think I'll read the book about once a year for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Well, we all have those, right? We all have that one book that we kind of go back that sort of grounds us. Okay, and then you can read your next read. You know, you need that to sort of redefine what made you love them to begin with.
Yeah.
And so I'm not even shy about admitting that I'll probably read The East End again. And I'll probably advertise it by putting it on my beach blanket with the Merrick Library copy so everyone can see that they can get it at the library in addition to purchasing it wherever it is. And I'll include all of those links. Well, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate you spending time with us today. I am so grateful.
Well, thank you, Caroline. I'm a huge fan of you now, too.
Yay, that's awesome. Listeners, you can find Jason Allen on his homepage, jasonallenauthor.com. I will provide, as I said, all the links to the things that we mentioned, of the debut novels, links to all of that on the podcast page for episode 30. I know, episode 30. I'm going to take a victory lap as soon as I hang up the phone. And I will also include a link to place your reserve for today's novel, The East End. Once again, I'd like to thank you all for joining us today on Top Shelf at Merrick Library. Remember to follow us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and wherever you find most podcasts. Don't forget to check out our amazing Merrick Library website at www.merricklibrary.org. Special thanks, as always, to Merrick Library Director Ellen Firer and the Merrick Library Board of Directors for getting us off the ground and onto the airwaves. Until the next time, remember to keep us on your top shelf.